This is the Brant and Sherry Podcast.
In church, someone asked you to pray. Brother Brant, would you like to lead us in prayer? Do you ever just want to be like, no?
Nope.
No, I do not want to lead us in prayer.
I would love to do that. Like if you're in a circle, it's sort of like, hey, Brant, go ahead and lead us in prayer. Just go ahead and put my head down while we're holding hands. Like, no, I don't want to. And then... Unless somebody else, I'd love to see somebody do that because that you put somebody on the spot if you're doing it. I was very aware of that when I was a youth pastor. Like, just say, "Hey, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and lead us in prayer?" Well, maybe
Kevin.
What options does Kevin have right there?
Because it's instant heathen status,
right?
If you say no, I don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to.
Because now it's your spiritual health that we're worried about.
Yeah.
Well, why, Kevin? Can you not? Whereas. Clearly, the Bible's Jesus said for us not to pray in public.
To be seen.
That. Right. So if a person feels like I can't carry that off here in a public
I do think
sphere.
Somebody ought to do that. Just say nope.
So we're going to encourage the podcast audience to try that. Let us know how it works.
I like that. Just be honest if you don't feel like doing it. A lot of people hate this blog, so I keep posting it over and over and over. It's called A Bucket List of Things to Do Before Going to Hell. And the reason they hate it is because, well, that's good stuff. A lot of that's really good stuff. I don't think you should make fun of good stuff. I'm making fun of it. Well, I'm making fun of us.
Right.
But the idea is this, and I'm saying here's a whole list of things you can do and still not know God. That's all. Because you can do all this and not really want him to be king, and... there's a lot of different descriptions of hell in the Bible, a lot of different metaphors that are used, a lot of different descriptions, but we know this, it's for people who don't want God as king.
Right.
And why would you want to even be in the kingdom of heaven if you want to be the king?
Right.
Because it'd be miserable.
And if you do all that stuff, I mean, that's one of the scriptures I always remember as a kid, is when Jesus said, you know, people say these things. I did that and that and that and that. And, that. And he never says, no, you didn't do any of that.
Right.
He just said, I didn't know you.
It's true. He's like, yeah, you did that. Huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's exactly it.
Right.
And
right.
It's, you can still see, because that's why I like seeing reactions to this kind of stuff. Because if you're amplifying on themes of Jesus, it's still going to divide people.
Yeah.
And the truth is a sword. It's a two-edged sword. So people will fall on one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And people who really feel like they need grace, like I need it, will fall on a certain side.
Mm-hmm.
Other people will get angry.
True.
And it's very interesting to see how that falls. But the stuff I listed here, I just made a list of stuff. This is all stuff you can do before going to hell. I won't give you the whole list, but memorize scripture, teach Sunday school, tithe, be a brilliant theologian, lead the Cookies for Newcomers ministry, think you're one of the elect, listen to Christian radio, work in Christian radio, protest same-sex marriage, protest people who protest same-sex marriage, lead powerful worship, preach the word an hour and a half every Sunday like a real man, be a missionary in Africa, host a small group from your church, occupy Wall Street, vote pro-life, go to seminary, feel guilty every day, pray for the president, tweet with Christian hashtags, have a brilliant theological logically astute understanding of grace, talk to people about Christ, say the sinner's prayer, speak in tongues, start an award-winning ministry to people with AIDS, be an elder in your church, argue with your teacher about evolution, argue with Ken Ham about evolution, lead family devotions, keep trying not to sin, argue theology on your blog. I mentioned get the world's most Christian tattoo of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, you can do all this stuff and not know God.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other interesting reaction to this blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this repeatedly. Well, Brant, this is all very negative. You're leaving out, you know, okay, so how... I don't mind that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm saying you can do all that and not know God, but Jesus would say things like this and leave people going, well, what?
That's the prodigal son story, right?
Yes.
What happened to the older son?
He just leaves it hanging.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant teaching method, because if you leave people with dissonance, they have to struggle with it.
Right.
Where
right.
do I fit in this?
Mm-hmm.
What is this all about?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not about me, what's it about?
Yeah. That's
well,
good.
If you're left there as a Christian going, well, I don't understand then.
Right.
Then I don't think you've understood the gospel.
Right.
That it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about anything you've done at all. Again, for people who have given up trying to live up to the perfect standard of a Christian, you've given that. You're just like, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's great news. Incredible news. If you're still trying to do it, you still think somebody can pull it off, whether it's Tim Tebow or somebody else, like they're just so awesome that they're making this thing work. This thing will make you mad.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, what are you saying then? We can't be, yeah, I'm saying you can't.
And that's freeing.
Yeah. To me.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Pretty excited. I have to fly a lot now. And they changed the design of some of the seats. So in the newer airplanes, mm-hmm. the magazines aren't down low.
Okay.
They put them up high. And they built them into the molding of the plastic of the seat. So there's like a little pocket built into the hard plastic.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So you got a little bit more room for your legs down low.
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing is, for me, I've never been able to sleep on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
But now I can take those magazines out, and you basically have this hard plastic edge
okay.
that you can rest your head on.
Huh.
And I'm not telling you it's comfortable. And I'm not telling you you won't get off the plane and have a huge indentation across your forehead.
Right. So what are you telling
us? I'm telling you that it really hurts. But I am able to sleep now on there.
Okay. Yeah. Congratulations,
Thank
Brant.
You. So that's good news on that front. It's just that when you get off, if people are meeting you
mm-hmm.
and they see you have a giant indentation across your forehead, then that's like a sign that you've been sleeping well and you've had a good trip.
Yeah. Good nap. I was telling one of the girls that was in my youth group, she's older now and she's having a baby, and I helped with her baby shower financially because she couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting down and we were talking about kids. And I said, I have not biologically had children, but I feel like, I don't feel like I did raise kids mm-hmm. because I was in youth ministry, urban youth ministry for so long. And these were kids who didn't have active parents. They lived with adults, but
mm-hmm.
those parents weren't active in their lives. So, you know, this was me making sure they got to prom, you know, bringing them socks when they needed, you know, for their workout or whatever. Constantly, multiple children. And, you know, I know there are a lot of single women who have that inside them because we're women. You feel that, you know, you want marriage and children. But there really is a lot of opportunity to be active in someone's life. And I had to stand back and thank God. I mean, one of the kids, her name's Chanessa, and she's 23 now, which makes me feel really old. And she was 14, and her mother died. And I took it upon myself in the church to just be active in her life. And now she does radio with PBS,
huh.
and she takes pictures of her. You know, I look on her Facebook page and she's in DC doing this or over here doing that. And she has her little headphones on. And then she works in the community with underprivileged children, teaching them radio stuff and everything. And I made a comment on my Facebook page that it seems that I have come up with a way to duplicate myself without the pain of childbearing.
I'd say so. I'd say maybe even she's doing NPR. She's probably smarter
yeah.
than us, and so you've probably outdone yourself. Sounds to me like she's way better than us.
She is. Well, she's not sitting on a patio recording a podcast. That's for sure.
She's on NPR. No, that's awesome. I think that's true. And I had shared that one time on the air, and I'm sure you remember this, but C.S. Lewis wrote about it in The Great Divorce, where they pictured this woman who was in heaven, and she's being followed by all these children.
Mm-hmm.
And the guide who was showing this guy around heaven was explaining what was going on.
Uh-huh.
He's like, wow, that must have been her kids that she had when she... It's like, no, those weren't her kids.
Right.
And in fact, she didn't steal kids either.
Mm-hmm.
She was a blessing to other people's kids.
Yeah.
And that's why they're laughing and playing with her now.
Uh-huh.
And it's such a great picture. I wish I knew it word for word, but it's such a great picture. It's so honoring of people like you or people who have been in that situation and invest in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy asked the guide in the story, he's like, well, did she try to steal, you know, children or steal other people's husbands? No, she was a blessing to... The husbands were better knowing her. The
wow.
wives were better knowing her, and the kids were better knowing her, and that's mm-hmm. why she is exalted now.
I encourage single women. There's nothing wrong with wanting to get married. I want to get married. That's just a natural thing, and wanting to have children, but not to let that occupy your life to the point that you're not a blessing to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Live now. I mean, there's no guarantee you're going to be here tomorrow. So, you know, when I look at people like Chanessa, or, you know, when I went back home, Jimmy is one of the boys uh-huh. who, you know, didn't have an active mother or father. And, you know, they took me out to this trampoline park. That was pretty embarrassing, of jumping around and everything. But I'm jumping around with them. And I'm like, you know what? On many levels, I do have kids. And I just think God will do that for you, give you that fulfillment. So if you're pining, you don't get a chance to see what he's doing around you.
My brother and I, when we were little, we would do something that a lot of people don't understand. I mean, we did play cops and robbers, and we played football and stuff, but we also played church. And
who was the preacher?
We would take turns.
Okay.
And so I'd be the preacher, and he'd be the song leader one week, you know, whatever.
We did the exact same thing.
Yeah, did you really?
Yeah, well, it's church kids.
If you're totally, and you're totally churched, and so am I, three days a week, your family's ministry oriented, grandpa's a legendary pastor, my dad's a pastor, and so we would see him preach three times a week, and so that's what you do when you're a kid like that. We always preached out of Romans 5:1, and one of us would have to sit there and be the congregation and watch it, and then shake your hand on the way out the door, you know, the preacher of... Good job.
Why was Romans 5:1 so prevalent in your little spirits?
My brother picked it, and it's therefore being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. I have that memorized because of that. Because
you had to preach
on it. Because I preached on it over and over and over. And I had no clue what it meant. None. No idea.
So good.
Yeah, so we would preach on that. And, you know, that's playing church. It occurred to me the other day, I was thinking about playing church, and here's why. May seem unrelated. A friend of mine who lives thousands of miles away sent me an email. Hey, is there anything you can do? I got this friend. His house has been foreclosed. His marriage isn't good right now. He's got kids. They need a place. They need people to help him move this weekend. It's an emergency. Then they need a place to stay temporarily. And then they need help with this. They need help with that. Well, I'm thousands of miles away. And I happen to know that this guy, this friend of my friend, is very churched, extremely into the Christian subculture, knows all the Casting Crown songs, knows all the, you know, all the parachurch ministries, all that sort of stuff. He's completely into that. And I asked the question, like, you know what? Where's his church? Well, that's a good question. Let me look into it. So he calls his church and says, they said they've already helped. They did their thing. Their benevolence ministry does a certain amount towards your power bill. And then after a point, I cut you off or whatever. And I've seen this before. Working in radio, occasionally people will call me. And these are people facing a sudden emergency. I've never been in this situation before in my life. I don't know what to do. We're losing our home. We got to move. Or this happened, that happened. And I'm always like, well, are you part of a church? Yeah, I am. What are they doing? Oh, they told me I need to call this or that. I called the office. Well, in the church families that I've been in the last 10 years, we've had things come up just like that.
Right.
Hey, we're getting foreclosed on. We got to leave. We have to leave our apartment. Or, you know, they're doing this or that with a family. The church family has put them up. Has put them up in our own homes, has given them thousands of dollars, has helped them move on a dime, has gotten trucks together, has carried everything into storage, has stored things in basements. To me, that's what the church does.
Because it's family.
It's not, but if it's a business, then it's, we have this benevolence ministry, it's $100 a month, they can do that, and then they cut you off.
Right.
It also happens, now, you don't know who I'm talking about. The pastor of this church makes $250,000 a year, and they have a huge sprawling campus and whatnot. Well, okay, this is not against people making $250,000 a year. Right. I'm all for people making $250,000 a year and more. But how is that practicing what the church family is supposed to be? Like, we give you $100, but we give this guy $250,000. Why?
Right.
Well, it's to free him up to do ministry or whatever. Okay, but it something seems out of order there.
I think so. And I also think that, because, you know, I come from a church background as well, and my mother was the person who was really dialed into, you know, needs and when people were going to struggling. So people can say, well, we have to set up that policy because, you know, people take advantage. I know, I've seen that happen. However, when it's a family, when it's a community, I actually see you going down the road.
I know you.
Yeah,
right.
Foreclosure is coming. I knew that about a year ago. And I sit down with you and say, hey, what is going on with this? And that's what family and community is.
That's what spiritual shepherding is.
Yes.
If I'm going to say I'm your spiritual shepherd to you, Sherry, I want you to call me your pastor, I better know you.
Yep.
How can I possibly be your spiritual shepherd if I don't know my sheep?
Right.
If I actually don't know that you're in thorns right now.
Right.
How in the world? So I'm looking at that too. Like, if you don't know the situation, if they're not there providing trucks and stuff, I don't see how that's a church. I honestly don't. Like, it's something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even something bad. It could be, I mean, call it a Christian-themed...
Like a nonprofit organization. Yeah,
where we specialize in teaching people about Bible things and having programs or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the church is family? Call it something else.
Yeah.
Or you're just playing church. Now, before you send a note, you don't understand, I appreciate that, but you don't understand. I mean, some people take advantage of the system.
Uh-huh.
Well, so we have to have policies. Okay, families don't usually talk about policies.
Right.
Because they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter, I don't have a policy about my daughter. Mm-hmm. If she's crying, well, okay, when my daughter cries, I have a policy about that. No, I want to know what's going on because that tells me something. And then I want to know her heart.
Right.
So for a radio station to deal with it, for somebody thousands of miles away to deal with it, for somebody who's outside the church family to deal with it, it's like, why don't you know? I can't ascertain what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
You should know these people, though.
You're sitting right there.
Yeah. You've invited them into their thing. You've asked for their money.
Yeah.
You've said you're a part of this church family. Mm-hmm. You've said all this stuff. So here's where it actually matters, again, or you're playing. So interesting. A while back, I bought a truck. And I really wanted to be that guy that would help move people.
Mm-hmm.
And this hurts, but some people made fun of that and were like, well,
okay,
that's dumb. Who's going to need a truck? Who's going to need you? Who's going to call you,
Brant,
to help them move?
I never said who's going to need you or who's going to call
irony
you.
Irony of ironies, just... this week is my story. On irony of ironies, a friend of mine needed to buy a bed at Big Lots and before her mom and aunt were coming to visit.
Who was this friend,
and
pray tell?
You know what? It was you.
Go figure.
Yeah, guess whose truck was needed at that
yes,
time?
Yes, I never said no one would need you. So I just thought...
The moral of this story is don't let people get you down. That's the moral.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Follow Brant on Twitter @BrantHanson and on the web @BrantHanson.com.